And he was on schedule for tonight, but he had a work change, so I'm a substitute. How many of you were involved with the chapel pre-1992? Good. Because I had to pull a message out of the archives. And so it's new for all of you. That's good to hear. Turn, if you will, to Psalm 3. Psalm 3. And we're going to read this psalm and then one background passage. It's a psalm of David. And your Bible may give a title to it. It says, a psalm of David when he fled from Absalom, his son. Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. Many there be which say of my soul, there's no help for him in God. Selah. But thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory, and the lifter up of mine head. I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill. Selah. I laid me down and slept. I awaked, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for thou hast smitten all mine enemies upon the cheekbone. Thou hast broken the teeth of the ungodly. Salvation belongeth unto the Lord. Thy blessing is upon thy people. Selah. Now turn over to 2 Samuel. Chapter 12. And we're going to read verses 9 through 15 just to get a bit of a connection. And then maybe in your spare time, you can read chapters 14 to 18 to get kind of the full background behind the circumstances that were happening, it was the setting in which David wrote that psalm. So 2 Samuel 12, verse 9. This was the prophet Nathan who was speaking to David after David had committed the sin of adultery and murder with Bathsheba and had her husband Uriah killed. And Nathan had come into his court at God's instruction to confront him. We won't read the whole scenario, but let's just pick up at verse 9. Wherefore hast thou despised the commandment of the Lord to do evil in his sight? Thou hast killed Uriah the Hittite with the sword, and hast taken his wife to be thy wife, and hast slain him with the sword of the children of Ammon. Now therefore, the sword shall never depart from thine house, because thou hast despised me, and hast taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be thy wife. Thus saith the Lord, behold, I will raise up evil against thee out of thine own house. And I will take thy wives before thine eyes, and give them unto thy neighbor. And he shall lie with thy wives in the sight of this son. For thou didst it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel and before the sun. And David said unto Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. And Nathan said unto David, the Lord also hath put away thy sin. Thou shalt not die. Howbeit, because by this deed thou hast given great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme, the child also that is born unto thee shall surely die. And Nathan departed unto his house, and the Lord struck the child that Uriah's wife bare unto David, and it was very sick. And if you continue reading, you find that that child did die. And that was only the beginning of the consequences of David's act. God forgave him, but he told him very clearly there would be consequences of his sin. And those consequences had to do with his family. And so as we read through those chapters that I referred to, we see, first of all, one of his sons, Ammon, taking advantage of a daughter, a stepsister, I guess you would say, or a half-sister, She was the sister of Absalom, and Absalom was enraged against Amnon. And so Absalom arranged a party, invited the king's sons, and when they had, it says, well drunk with wine, he rose up and he killed Amnon. So there's the first sword affecting his household. He lost his son because of his sin. And then David really didn't do anything. He had not done anything with Amnon, and we have to believe that he knew what had happened because there were others in the family that knew that this half-sister had been raped. And David apparently didn't do anything about it. And it makes you wonder if it was because of his own sin that he just couldn't bring himself to punish his son. And so then Absalom, out of anger, kills him. And again, David really didn't do anything about that. Absalom fled. He stayed away. David never really went to bring him back. David's general brought him back. David ignored him for a period of time. And so the gap, the distance between this father and son grew. And Absalom began to build up bitterness in his heart towards David. And so as that began to happen, Absalom started a plot. The Bible tells us that he would go out and sit in the gate. And as the people from the nation would come through the gate, he would ask them, well, what's your issue? And they would tell him, and he'd say, well, here's what I would do. Of course, he had no responsibility. He didn't have to really make any decisions. So he could tell you that he would do something that you would like, and he could tell this person he would do what they liked, and they never really knew the difference. They just thought, man, this is a great guy. And so Absalom was building a following in all this. And so it came to pass in this process that he created this plot. He took men to the city of Hebron, telling David he was going to worship, but he was really going to create and announce his overthrow of the throne. And as David hears this, he hears that all the people are siding with Absalom. Well, not quite all. He had a few close warriors that were with him, close advisors that were with him. But apparently a lot of people were siding with Absalom. So David flees the city. And that's kind of where we find him in this setting, writing this psalm. So we're going to look at three primary points tonight. We're going to consider David's trouble. And then we're going to look at David's trust. And then we're going to look at David's triumph. So his trouble is spelled out here in the first part. It says, Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. And you can sense almost an aspect of surprise, and I can understand his surprise. David was a loved king. He was their champion. He was the one that had defeated Goliath. He was the one that people were crying out, David has killed thousands. And so he had a very loyal following, and now all of a sudden, it appeared anyway, that they had all turned against him. So you can appreciate, I think, the quickness of the turn, the desperate nature of what his perspective must have been as he looked out and he realized how many people were turning against him. And so he has fled and he's hiding for his life. And four people in particular that I'd like to pinpoint because they represent kind of different categories of people. Here he knows that his own son is leading the charge, seeking his life. Now, how would that impact you? If your own son were trying to take your life. That's the situation that David finds himself in. Here's a family member that's turned against him, and not only a family member that's turned against him, but he's led a lot of other people. One of those people was a man named Ahithophel. And Ahithophel was apparently a very wise man. Ahithophel had been a counselor of David, a close counselor of David. Who can tell me another very unique relationship that Ahithophel had? Anybody? I think it was Bathsheba's grandfather, I think, okay? Now, you can all of a sudden realize why Ahithophel might have a bone to pick with David. I mean, I'm sure Ahithophel loved Uriah. And here was his family. And David had just come and intervened, and boom, his son-in-law was gone. Son-in-law was a godly man, a brave man. And now his wife's been taken by the king. And I'm sure his heart began to turn and bitterness began to grow. And we can understand that bitterness. And so now David, probably in his guilt, realizes this is not good. Because Ahithophel, the Bible tells us, was a very wise counselor. And so he knew that Ahithophel was against him. Another man that we encounter in the story is a man named Shimei. Shimei was a descendant of Saul. Now, David had been very gracious in not killing the descendants of Saul. In many nations, that's exactly what would happen if somebody took the throne. They got rid of all the heirs of the previous king because they didn't want them rising up against him. But David didn't do that. And this Shimei came out against David when David was sneaking out of town, trying to escape, and he started cursing at him. He started throwing insults at him. And he thought, oh, my vengeance is coming. He's going to get exactly what he deserves. Now, he should have been very thankful at David's mercy towards him and his family. And yet you can see this latent anger and hatred that began to erupt. And then fourthly, Mephibosheth. Now, Mephibosheth wasn't really against David, but his servant Ziba made David think that Mephibosheth had forsaken. So from David's perspective, out here somewhere in the wilderness, perhaps in a cave, he's thinking, my son wants to kill me. My best counselor has turned against me. This other guy is just representative of people that hate me. And here's this man that I have done nothing but good for. And even he has turned against me. Can you see David's mental state? And perhaps, as he says here in the psalm, how many there are that increased against me, perhaps it wasn't as many as he thought, but with his perspective, everybody was against him. Have you ever been there? Where things seem so bad that we begin to make assumptions about them being even worse than they really are. Well, things look pretty bleak for David, and his chance of survival looks very slim. But not only are the circumstances bad, but then people begin to attack the one thing that was his anchor, and that was his faith in God. Look at what it says. Many there be which say of my soul, there's no help for him in God. You've done it now. God's not going to help you. Fortunately, David knew otherwise. This statement, I think, is an indication of his strong testimony. Because these people knew that David depended on God. It had been the marking point of his life, hadn't it? All through his life, David had demonstrated himself as a person who trusted God. And now in the midst of circumstances, people are saying that God's not going to help him. And sometimes that's also a situation we find ourselves in. People look at us and we're in a really difficult set of circumstances and we're trying our best to trust God and to believe. And unbelievers say, oh man, you know, you really need to get a grip and you need to get control of this. So you need to do such and such. You need to take action. You need to do all these things. You can't just sit back and wait. And yet, throughout the Bible, it talks to us about waiting on God. especially in difficult circumstances that are outside of our control. It may be a sickness. It may be the loss of a job. It may be any number of things. And the Bible tells us that we're to be still and know that He's God. I mean, imagine the Israelites standing by the Red Sea and the enemy's charging. And you know, God's saying, be still and know that I'm God. I would have a hard time with that. You know, I'd be picking up rocks or something, getting ready to fight. We read in Isaiah 40, 31, but they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. One time I heard Charles Swindoll make this comment. He made a statement that it's good to keep in mind at difficult times, times like this that David was facing, times like we all face in our life, times that just seem to erupt right in front of us. We don't expect it, but they're there. He said that when things look bleak, when you are about to panic, remember that in eternity past, before you were even thought of, which isn't possible, God planned this day. And we have to keep that perspective. God has not been surprised by a single thing that has entered into your life or my life. He's never taken back. He never turns around and says, oh, I almost let that one slip. He always has them under total control. And that's the reason that in the midst of this trouble, David could trust in God. They said that there's no help for him in God, but David knew better. And you know, he could think back at so many events in his life and remember, what about that? What about when I had to fight that lion? What about when I had to fight that bear? What about when I had to go out against that giant when the entire nation was trembling on the hill? What about King Saul when he was trying to kill me out of jealousy? When he was chasing me all over the country, much like the situation I'm in right now, he had a full army. I had a bunch of ragamuffins. And God took care of me. You could almost see David saying, I just can't wait to see how God's going to solve this situation. Consider this. You remember when David was fleeing from Saul? And I believe it was twice that he had an opportunity to take Saul's life. Once in a cave and once out when they were sleeping. And his men encouraged him to do it. He says, the Lord's delivered him into your hand. Here's your enemy right here in front of you. And what did he say? He said, God forbid that I lift my hand against the Lord's anointed. Or another way of saying it is, if God wants him out of the way, God will take him out of the way. I'm not doing it. Because God's the one that put him in the role he's in, and I'm not going to usurp that authority. What trust? This is a very similar situation. Now he's seeing if God, in fact, look at 2 Samuel 15. Verses 25 and 26. This is as they were leaving the city and his limited entourage was going with him. One of the priests was with him and they were carrying the ark. And it says in verse 25, and the king said to Zadok, carry back the ark of God into the city. If I shall find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me again and show me both it and this habitation. But if he thus say, I have no delight in thee, behold, here am I. Let him do to me as seemeth good unto him. What trust? He didn't know how it was going to turn out, but he knew that God would do right. He didn't know. I think of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego standing before the king. And they said, you know, our God can take care of us. And we really don't know exactly what he's going to do, but we know this, we're not bowing to you. They trusted God to do what was right, even though it might be a pretty unpleasant set of circumstances. And that's what David was able to do, because he had been tested before. He could look back and he could see times where God had worked in his life. Now, I don't know about you. I can look back and see times where God has worked in my life. But isn't there always a temptation when you're in it, a different thing? But is he really going to do it this time? I mean, he might let me go through something I don't want to go through. And he might. He might. But it's always working things together for the good of those that are called according to his purpose. And so we have to be willing to trust in his character when he's leading us down paths and allowing things into our life that aren't things that we would volunteer for and choose. In James, we're told to count it all joy when we fall into various trials, knowing this, that the testing of your faith worketh patience. And in Romans 5, it says, verse 3 and 4, we glory in tribulations. Also, knowing that tribulation works patience, and patience experience, and experience hope. So we go through a trial. We gain experience, don't we? We have something we can look back to, and we can say, God, help me in that set of circumstances. And that then gives us patience when the next thing happens. We can say, man, I don't like this. This is frightening. But I've been through something else and God was with me. He didn't fail me. He didn't forsake me. And then what does that do? It gives us hope. It gives us hope that the trial is coming to an end. So David was able to trust. He goes on and he says this. He says, thou art a shield for me. Now again, David knew from the past that God protected him. This is something that always amazed me when I read the account of David in Saul's court. It says that Saul took up a spear and tried to pin David against the wall. Now, I think that Saul and Jonathan were the only ones that had weapons for a while, and he probably was pretty good. He was probably pretty accurate. How did he miss David? David wasn't expecting it. God caused him to miss David. God was his shield. And he could look back and he could think, you know, in all rights, I should be dead. Because there's nothing that made him miss other than God making him miss. So he could look back and he could say, God is a shield for me. He is the one that protects me. And we think of Job. Job went through misery. God allowed him to go through misery. But here's the beauty of it. Satan couldn't have touched him. None of it could have happened if God, in his loving care, didn't allow it to happen, and he allowed it for a purpose. Purposes that we fully can't understand. And so David recognized that God was his shield. But then he goes on to say, thou art my glory. David was a king. He had achieved great things. And yet, in the midst of all of it, he said, you know, it's really not important whether I'm a king or not. It's really not important what people think of me. What's really is important is what they think of God. And hopefully that they see being demonstrated through me. So, you know, we see professional athletes, college athletes, high school athletes. We see little kids playing soccer and they score a goal and they're running down the field. You know, that's their glory. David said, I don't want any of that. God is my glory. He's the one I want to point to. So he had a proper perspective on his purpose in life. Not only that, he says, but thou art the lifter of my head. Look at Psalm 27, where he gives this same thought. Psalm 27, verse 6. Start with verse 5. For in time of trouble he shall hide me in his pavilion. In the secret of his tabernacle shall he hide me. He shall set me upon a rock. And now shall my head be lifted up above mine enemies round about me. Therefore will I offer in his tabernacle sacrifices of joy. I will sing, yea, I will sing praises unto the Lord. David recognized that God was the one that had put him in the role he was in. He was the one that had exalted him. He was the one that had lifted him up, so to speak. We see it again over in 2 Samuel chapter 7. This is where God was declaring what we know as the Davidic covenant, or the promise that he made to David. Chapter 7 of 2 Samuel, verse 8. Now therefore, so shalt thou say unto my servant David, thus saith the Lord of hosts, I took thee from the sheepcote, from following the sheep, to be ruler over my people, over Israel. How comforting it must have been for David to think about that and to recognize, I'm not in this position because I fought for it. I'm not in this position because I envied the role. I'm in this position because God appointed me to this position. He raised me up from nothing, from being a shepherd of sheep, and he put me as the leader of his people. And so if this is where he wants me, it really doesn't matter who rebels against me. It really doesn't matter how many people rise up against me, because he will preserve me and keep me in the place that he's put me. So he recognized that God was the one that had lifted him up into this position. He also recognizes that he has personal access to God. Look at what it says in verse 4. I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill. It wasn't that David wasn't concerned, wasn't fearful. He cried out. And I imagine it was an emotional moment. It was an emotional time for him. He was crying out for his life. And yet he recognized, instantly I believe, God heard that cry. It didn't bounce off the top of a cave. It didn't go out into the night. But the God who had created him and exalted him had heard his cry. We too have that access, don't we? Hebrews 4:15 tells us, for we have not an high priest who can't be touched with the feeling of our infirmities. He is there listening all the time, at every moment, to the cries of his people. He's willing to respond. His response might not be what we would want at that moment, but he always responds in his perfect wisdom and in accordance with his plan for us. Matthew 7:11 says it this way, if you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts unto your children, how much more shall your Father, who is in heaven, give good gifts to them that ask? Now think about that when you're in a trial, especially those of you who are parents. When you see your child hurting, what's your response? What's your response? Do we not think that God's response is infinitely greater than our response to the calls of our kids? I mean, really. We defame Him. We deny who He is when we fail to recognize that's how He responds. I mean, He told us right there. I'm not making it up. He told us that He responds in a greater way than we respond to our own children when they have needs. And then in that same statement, David recognizes the righteousness of God. It says he heard out of his holy hill, the place where only righteousness rises up. And I'm sure he could look at this situation, and in his heart of hearts, he knew, this isn't right. Absalom is wrong. I haven't done anything that deserves this. Now again, his own words would say he didn't know what the conclusion would be, but he counted on the fact that it would be a righteous judgment by God. And he was willing to submit himself to that righteous judgment. So we see the trouble that he's in. We see his trust. And then we see his triumph all wrapped up in, as it were, one instant. It says, I laid me down and slept. Refreshing news to our brother Dave, right? I laid me down and slept. Can you imagine that? With these circumstances swirling around him, out there in a cave somewhere, and his response was to lay down and sleep. Think about the message that sent to the people that were following him. That he could have such trust and such peace that he could lay down in those circumstances and he could sleep. You know, I had a slight experience, nothing as traumatic as what David was going through, but Bethany was just weeks old, maybe days old, and I had to travel. I was in Columbia, South Carolina. No, I was in Sumter, South Carolina. That's a lot worse than Columbia. I hope nobody hears from Sumter or here. I'm down there. I guess it's three and a half hours away from home. And Kim, it was her first night of going out to the Wednesday night meeting after she had had the baby. And her mom and grandma were staying at our house with Bethany. And Kim comes driving up, and there's an ambulance in the driveway. And she goes in, and she's pretty calm, tries to find out what's going on, and they said that they were holding Bethany, and she quit breathing. And, you know, in hindsight, you know, we know now, you know, Bethany has epilepsy, and she's been under medication from the time she was a teenager. And that may well have been the very first seizure-type moment that she had. It never repeated up, you know, through her early years. So I get a phone call. And I don't know how many of you parents can identify with this, but, you know, when your child's first born, you're just kind of getting used to the idea. And then at some point, they really begin to be precious. Maybe it was instant for you, but yeah. I'm probably kind of weird. But I just remember thinking, Lord, I mean, this just can't be. She means so much. And here I was, totally out of the loop. I could do nothing. I couldn't even see her. And I had a choice I had to make. And I simply prayed, and I lifted her up to the Lord. And He gave me peace, and I slept. The minute I woke up, I called the house the next morning. But when we turn our worries and our circumstances over to the Lord, He can give us that peace so that we can simply rest in His goodness and His care. And that's what David did. He had triumph over his fears. And his fears would seem to have been very justified. But not only did he have triumph from fear, he had triumph from his foes. Look at verses 6. It says, I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about. Now, he could have easily been wringing his hands. He could have been, you know, talking to his guard. Man, you got to make sure you don't see it. If you see anything, you got to let me know. We got to be ready to act. He could have just been all balled up with worry. And yet God gave him not only victory over his fear, but over his foes. It says, arise, Lord, save me, O my God, for thou hast smitten all mine enemies upon the cheekbone. Now, I guess that could mean one of two things. He could be looking back. And he could realize every time in my life that an enemy has risen up against me, you've taken care of it. That's very possible. He could also be attributing the victory to the Lord and recognizing that God was going to take care of this set of circumstances. He could be thinking back to when God defeated unnumbered multitudes of Midianites and Amalekites with Gideon and 300 men. And realized that he had that many men with him. And that it just wasn't a big deal for God. So David found victory in the one that has all power. So how about you and how about us? Perhaps you're in the midst of some kind of trial. I would encourage you to look back. One of the things that we started and we've not done a real good job was trying to create within our household a wall of remembrance. A place where we can put little tokens of times when God showed Himself powerful in our life. And have a place that we can point to our kids, because they didn't have the same perspective we did. And remind them, this is what God did at this particular time. This is what God did at this particular time. So we need to be able to look back and see, because we know we're creatures that are forgetful. We tend to forget how God has helped us. Perhaps we're in bondage to some sin. We can trust the one who can break that power. We need to trust Him to be working in our lives for all things. So as we look at this situation from David, there's a lot to be encouraged by, a lot to recognize about God. And we can rejoice in the fact that that same God is our God. And He loves you just as much as He loved David. And He's got a purpose for you that's just as big as His purpose for David. And He's just as determined to bring it about as He was in David's life. And He's just as capable. So let's rejoice in the truth of that tonight.